the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
I know when a good beer is a cold one. If you got green, better roll one. And the right drive is a slow one. Down on back row, baby, I know.
Lots to talk about. Lions season didn't really go the way we wanted it to. And that last game meant a lot more in a lot of different ways than I think we realized. Going to talk a little NFL open coaching positions. Going to talk a little Harbaugh. And then the big, and I mean big in the sense of it was a great get, but the guy's also huge. Going to talk a little Bol Bol, 7'2" center from Denver. Before we do that, get the guys on. Bring in Sergeant Salty, Justin Marcus.
I passed my physical when joining this team, so I'm not going to get my trade rejected. How are we doing?
I appreciate you, buddy. You're a great guy. And as always, the stat man, Russ Ivanek.
Hey, I guess I'm also here. I couldn't trade me for a second round pick either. Sorry.
Hey, we tried. No one was taking the phone call. We gave it our best attempt here. Guys, before we get to all that, lead it off the way we've been leading off for the last 20 weeks, and that is Lions football. Lions finished the season a ugly season, guys. One so bad that we actually have a tie in there in our record. Doesn't happen very often, but it's the Lions. It's crazy all the way around. But the big thing, and I think it's getting made way more of a deal out of it than it needs to be, is the fact that if the Lions lose that game on Sunday to the rival Green Bay Packers, they get the number one pick in the draft. They secure that first overall pick. You can do whatever you want with it. Obviously, that pick goes to Jacksonville. Lions get a win over Green Bay. Justin, when you look at this, I get it's the number one pick. It's that coveted thing that if you're going to have a bad year, have a really bad year. But this is a year where I really don't think the 1-2 make that much of a difference.
Yes. I was irrationally pissed off, and I still kind of am about it. Mm-hmm. Talent-wise, I'm on the same page. 1-2 was kind of the same thing based on the Jaguars' needs and our needs. So I can live with that. But like, I'm also of the same mindset that I mitigate risk like 24/7 in my life. Like, mm-hmm. And if I can mitigate the potential of another team taking a player that is a Pro Bowler from the jump versus us having another Eric Ebron moment, like I'm going to mitigate that risk. I'm going to lose to the Packers just so I can take one little extra possibility to blame someone else at the end of the day. And I'd rather, if the Lions are going to swing and miss at one, I'd rather have, like, that's how it happens. No one else is in their way. We're lucky. I'm like 51% pissed off because I would have been more comfortable with him having any pick. Okay, we're not going to get the offensive lineman out of Bama probably, but that's just a philosophy. Like, if someone needs to have the stones to be like, we're going to do everything all the time to be a certain way. But we're lucky that there's no quarterback at the top of that draft board.
Yeah, I think that's really the underlying thing of the whole thing is if there was like Trevor Lawrence sitting there, we'd be pissed. We'd be really, really mad. But I'm actually, in my messed up head, I'm willing to spin it the other way that, hey, we might actually be in the best situation to trade down now because we're at 2. And Houston at 3, if they solve the whole Deshaun Watson situation and ship him out, suddenly they're in need for a quarterback. Do they get antsy? Does that then mean that someone further down, like the Panthers, gets antsy that Houston might? Well, they're not going to jump up to 1, because if the Lions are 1, the Jags are 2, and the Jags aren't taking a quarterback. But they might jump to 2 in this situation with Detroit. Mm-hmm. But that's a very long-winded way of throwing on a lot of contingencies to say, anything interesting is completely outside of the Lions' control, including who they're going to pick, and that's what the win cost them.
And I agree. And see, that's the thing. Like, had there been a big quarterback in this draft, 2 doesn't bother me. Jacksonville mm-hmm. already has Trevor Lawrence; they don't need a quarterback. So you knew that quarterback was going to fall to you, or someone has to overspend to get Jacksonville to come down. But the thing is, Jacksonville is so bad right now; they can't really afford to not take that number one pick. And get a top tier talent, kind of the same as the Lions. The Lions need so much that I don't really know what the package looks like that gets Brad Holmes to go, you know what? Yeah, let's trade away the second overall pick and a guy who's likely going to be a day one starter. The other thing with that is I don't think that pick holds as much value because I don't think anyone has Kenny Pickett as a top two pick in the draft. So you're not really going, oh, if we don't get him, number three is definitely going to take him. Well, that's not the case at all. So this is a year where I don't think you're going to see a lot of talk about teams trading away their, the top five picks. Cause this is kind of a year where you're just going to get what you can get and develop from there. This is not a, a big year. The number one receiver in the draft tore his ACL in the national championship.
Yep.
Matt Corral for Ole Miss has got injured in the game. So you have got, you have these top pick guys kind of going down left and right. And it's like this year, I think is going to be one of those weird drafts where, you know what, we could see like an offensive lineman go first overall just because of what it is and how weird it is. That's not to say I think Hutchinson's going to fall. I think Hutchinson holds on to that number one spot the rest of the way, unless his combine is just so so disastrous. Well, that's also because I also can't pronounce the other guy's name, so I'm just going to say Hutchinson.
And, Thibodeau.
I know it's Thibodeau. I'm just messing. And that's the thing. Thibodeau's going to fall to us, and that I'm not too upset about that either. So it is weird because it's that thing of we were the words we worked so hard to be this bad don't seem to fit the same, but they it is the common, like, you know, they were so bad this year that you almost feel like that number one pick has to be the reward. And it's like, I wasn't as beat up about it. I would rather see the win because it's another game where your team played hard all the way to the end. Yes. No Davante Adams, no Aaron Rodgers for the entire second half. The outcome probably looks a lot different if they play. But Green Bay was in the same spot. They don't know that Aaron Rodgers is going to be on the field for them next year. They don't know if Davante Adams is going to be there. They needed to kind of know what they had coming into next year. And I wasn't really too sold on Jordan Love. He didn't have a bad game, but you know, two interceptions to in his final few minutes do not help him in any way, shape, or form. So it didn't really bother me too much. I'd rather them get the win, end on a high note, build off of it, and you know, be really bad next year for that first overall pick, and we'll take a quarterback.
One thing on that real quickly, because as I was stewing on Sunday and I was talking to myself about how pissed I am that they won, I heard people saying things like, oh, this is like kind of like what you said in a way, Eric, that this is a momentum builder. This is a culture builder. Then God damn it, when we lose games next year, I want someone to say, you guys, January 9th. Oh my God. Do you remember the day? Like if we're going to fall on a sword that this is such a beautiful thing for them to do, they better say that date many times over. Because I it can't be fine in the moment. And then when they lose, oh man, but January 9th.
But see, I think it's a culture builder for a different reason. I don't look at it as like a culture builder as this is a springboard. I look at it more as like, this is an example of when we, because if you look at that game, and we'll go over it here in a second, they had their bad plays like every team does in every game. But for the most part, they executed on all facets. I look at it more as a springboard of being like, we already saw we can do it. Now, yes, we were playing against backups, but we executed. Why can't we do that every week? Why can't we build? I don't see it as like, oh, we're down by, you know, down by seven at halftime in week six. And they all have to go, don't you remember Green Bay last year? I look at it as more as a way of saying, if you know, Campbell in the locker room saying we've executed before. Look at last year in those games that we won. We executed before. Let's do that again. I don't see it as some like they have to put a sign that says, you know, January 9th in Ford Field was our day and let's remember forever. That's pointless. But
it's got to be a Ted Lasso sign.
Absolutely.
Yellow paper turned sideways says January 9th, just like Ted Lasso, believe.
No, it says finish. Finish the assignment, finish the season. Because that's what they did. And if you're going to say you're building a culture, I think that's what the culture is, that you're here and you're here until the end. Even if it's ugly, you're going down with it, because that seems the kind of gravelly voiced message that Dan Campbell would be trying to give out. So yeah, give me the Honolulu blue and silver finish sign. Slap that baby.
Before we get to recap in the game and we get to, we're going to do like we've done every year, we're going to do our Lions report cards. Before we get to that, I have to ask you guys this, because the first one I was pretty cool with. Second one, I get it. Where do you guys fall? And I'm sure you've both seen the video. Where do you guys fall on these locker room celebrations that they're having where Dan Campbell's giving the kind of speech that you would think a coach gives after a team's hoisting an NFC championship or hoisting a, you know, the Lombardi trophy. And he's giving it after win 3 in week 17. good for the team to, you know, to celebrate these moments. Maybe, you know, maybe dial it down a little bit and start choosing to celebrate games that mean a little more than a third win in week 17, Russ.
That ain't for us. That was my takeaway. Is it good for the team to answer your question? Yep. And that's, it seems like a good for the team internal thing. It was a rough season as we've spelled out for the last 18 weeks here. Ending on a high note, being able to feel good in a sport that's so dictated by passion, that's fine. Did it seem really cheesy and corny and kind of in poor taste after a 3-13-1 season? Yes. Yes, it did to me, but it's not for me. It's for them.
Yeah, Jay, does Dan Campbell seem like that coach that at the end of that speech just said, hey, look at it this way. We're 1-0 going into the offseason.
Oh, my God.
Does he seem like that kind of guy?
You got to look in front of the 6 inches in front of your face.
Thank you, Al. Thank you. Thank you, exactly, Albert.
Right. I blame Al Pacino for any overly hyped locker room speech. It's just, but like, I don't like it personally. Mm-hmm. I'm going to reference Ted Lasso again because I don't know why I'm fascinated with that show.
Be a goldfish?
So here's the thing. That's kind of giving us a look into a locker room. Russ, you're right. It's for them. That's like their moment. They have a different timeline of success compared to what we want them to do and act and behave. We put them on like a bad pedestal in a way. It's weird. I don't want to see it. Maybe they should just have it private. But it really is. That's for them to like, they did something right. Good job. Let's lift everybody up. But I also think if you watch that Al Pacino speech too many times, you're always just going to talk like that.
Oh, yeah. That's 6 inches in front of your face. You got a claw with your fingernails. No, yeah, I know the speech very well. I know what you're referring to. And look, yes, I'm on the same page as you guys. It was a rough year. You got to take the positive where you can find the positive. And they're doing that. I think it's great to celebrate it. But, you know, the Detroit Red Wings won back-to-back cups, and I don't think they celebrated that hard after the second cup. So it's like, know that this is a great feeling and you want to feel this way again, but every week in that locker room next year, that those wins should just be adding up to you feeling that great at the end of the year when the wins mean way more than a third win in 17 weeks. That needs to become business as usual for them, as opposed to every win celebrating like they just won the division. Because eventually if you treat it as business as usual, eventually you have a chance to win the division because you'll stack up enough wins that it's possible. So we'll see. Lions finished the year 37-30 win over the Green Bay Packers at Ford Field. Take you through it real quick. Aaron Rodgers only played the first half, 14 of 18, 138 and 2 touchdowns. Jordan Love came in for the second half. Jordan Love, obviously their first overall pick 2 years ago, 10 of 17, 134, one touchdown, two interceptions, both late. Green Bay didn't really try to run the ball that much. Leading rusher had 63 yards. They rushed for 122 as a team. Lazard, 5 catches, 75 yards and 2 touchdowns. Like I said, Devontae Adams didn't play that much. 6 catches, 155 yards. On the flip side, Jared Goff, back after missing a couple weeks, 21 of 30, 238 and 2 touchdowns. Guys, I'm going to go on record. I think this might have been his best game of the year. I think he played the best I've seen him play this year. Obviously in a meaningless end of the year game, but still.
Perfect.
So, yeah, still something. How about this, though? I thought this was awesome. It made me laugh so hard. Tom Kennedy, relatively new in the NFL, has never had a touchdown in his career. His first touchdown is as a quarterback throwing on a trick play. He goes 1 of 1 for 75 yards and 1 touchdown. Not a bad way to get your first touchdown. I'm sure he would have liked to have caught it, but still. Yeah, Lions, no running game. Really as well. Williams, 43 yards on 13 carries. Swift, seven rushes for 30 yards. Receivers, actually, you know, St. Brown. This guy, I swear, no one ever tell this guy he's that good because we'll lose him. 8 catches, 109 yards and 1 touchdown. Raymond, 4 catches, 101 yards and 1 touchdown. So, 2 receivers over 100 yards. I would love to know when the last time that happened. I have to think it has to be like Golden Tate and Calvin Johnson or something like that, in all honesty.
I bet it's in the Tate era.
I would think it's probably Tate and Marvin. Bolden. Yeah. Anquan Bolden had like 4 catches his entire time in Detroit.
Mission with him.
I love that man.
So overall, look, it was second half against backups, it's a little bit of a meaningless win, but at the same time, it means something to the team. I think Green Bay's actually the number one seed, so they actually have a really good chance to rip through these playoffs. And obviously, we'll cover the playoffs as we go. But guys, as we get to the report cards, when you look back on this year, I found this one as I was putting together my grades. I found this one actually tough to grade because there was so much change, so much turnover, so much flux that I really didn't have expectations going into the year. So what we got out of these guys was, you know, in my opinion, par for the course.
Yeah, that's the funny thing about expectations when you're grading this, right? That objectively, a team that finishes with the number two overall pick, it should be bad grades all through. Like, probably shouldn't be any above average grades, but I'm willing to bet we have at least a couple B's sprinkled in there.
I would think so.
Throughout. And it's probably because of performances like this, where we see two receivers go over 100 yards and it feels good at the end. And it's the recency bias. And it's also, we thought we had no receivers that would get 100 yards the whole season. And here we got two of them.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's get into it here. I know we all have grades, and every year we realize why Justin never should have been an educator. No one would ever pass his classes.
Yeah, this guy.
I'm going to lead it off here. I have stats in front of me for some of these guys, and, you know, that's what I use to kind of grade. Jared Goff finished the year 3,245 yards, 19 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, so finished with a 2-to-1 ratio. Obviously missed a couple games with injury, but I decided this is one spot where I decided to be a little more generous, and that's for new head coach. You're the starting quarterback on a Super Bowl contending team last year. You get traded for a guy who looks like he might be the last piece they needed for the Rams to get to the Super Bowl and actually be competitive. You go to a team that's in a lot of disarray. You lose the two top receivers on the team. You lose Swift to injury and inconsistency for a while there. You really have no number one receiver to speak of. You have a starting left tackle who was a starting right tackle who was a top pick in the draft and then has to jump from side to side multiple times throughout the year. Your tight end, who's a franchise tight end, as we believe, is triple covered most times because he's the only passing weapon you actually have to start the year. So that being said, he finishes with over 3,000 passing yards and a 2-to-1 ratio. I'm going to be fair. I'm giving him a C+. Jared Goff could have taken this team off. He could have really gone even further off the cliff this year, but he was stayed competitive and he never really cost them games. Now, he never went out and other than the final drive for the first win, he never really went out there and won them games, but he never cost them games. So for that C+, you did a job. We need to see improvement, but I think that improvement comes with this offense getting more pieces to help it improve, Jay.
I think you're in the right ballpark. You're just sitting in the wrong section. I gave him a lowercase C-. First of all, lowercase because he got tiny hands. The C-, I agree with what you were saying to develop the C grading for him, but the minus side for it is early in the year, the red zone fumbles. That was like his specialty, all right? And I get that it's a new team, it's new coach, new management, new everything, right? New city, new zip code. Football's not new. This is not a new concept of him to hang on to a football. He's done it in high school, in college, and he should be doing it on his second team now in the NFL. So that and the depth, if we're going to look at the full quarterback position, there ain't no depth over there.
Yeah, that's true.
Not at all. So it is, I wish I could give it an incomplete because that's what it really feels like on this team. We are incomplete of our quarterback, but lowercase C-, Jared Goff and company.
And like you said, we're in the way of depth. Boyle, the other starting quarterback for 5 games, or he played in 5 games, 61 of 94 for 526, 3 touchdowns, and this is where it's bad, 6 interceptions. So there really is no depth on this team.
No, there's absolutely not. And that had to factor into my grade a little bit, but I just want to take this moment to appreciate that we are one position group in, and I get to keep it mid. For the first time. Yes. Eric a C+, Justin a C-. I had a C. And okay. It's a C for clean it up, right? Because the first half, frankly, was an F with all of the fumbles and everything. The second half was probably at least a B. He wasn't, like Eric said, Goff's not the reason they were winning games, but he stopped being any reason why they couldn't win games. He was perfectly average overall. If you look at the length of the season, he was 10th in pass attempts and pass completions per game. He was 5th in interception percentage. Perfectly average stats. Not so great when you realize that he didn't finish in the top 10 in anything else. So it's a lot of empty completions. But that's not, it's empty completions, right? Not empty misses. So it's, yeah, it's a C for me. It's C for clean it up is going to be a pretty common thread here going through the team.
Yeah, see, it's tough too, because personally, I think the last 6 weeks of this season, if that offense is on the field for 17 games, I think we see maybe a couple more wins. I'm not sure. I'm not going to get carried away here, but we see maybe a two or three more wins, but we see an offense that's legitimately competitive night in and night out. Goff probably finishes in the 4,000 yards and, you know, mid 20s for touchdowns, probably throws another 5-6 touchdowns in there. Yeah. But I'm just saying it was really that thing of, it took them 6 or 7 weeks just to get comfortable. And then once they got comfortable, you at least started to see signs of things. Kind of this weird thing of, they got comfortable right around the time Anthony Lynn stopped
weird plays. Right.
Maybe that's why he's not in Detroit anymore. All right.
Clean it up.
Yeah, clean it up. Moving on. We're on to the running backs now. Now, this is where we get into, you kind of got a grade for the collective, not the individual. But to give you that, the two main runners on the team, DeAndre Swift, 151 attempts, 617 yards, 5 touchdowns. Now, again, had a little bit of injury bugs here or there. Williams, 153 carries, 601 yards, 3 touchdowns. And then Craig Reynolds, the third guy who got the most carries, 55 attempts, 230 yards, and he didn't rush for any touchdowns. But when you guys look at this rushing attack, it's nothing to write home about. As a collective, for every single person that ran the ball this year, the Lions got just shy of 2,000 yards on 427 attempts, averaging 4.4 yards a carry. That's not good enough to get it done. Not good enough to get it done at all. So, Russ, when you look at this one, the running back core gets what kind of grade from you?
Long story short, it's a C-plus for me. I think it's a solid rotation. I mean, you went through a lot of the stats already with the 4.4 average. Swift and Williams together were a 4.0, which is about as average as it can get. But they gave a lot in the receiving game there, especially Swift. Battling injuries again, though, which kind of mitigates that. And I kept waffling down. But ultimately, I was impressed with the next man upmanship, if that's even a phrase I can turn here, that Reynolds like came that. In, that Jefferson came in for a little bit, that Igwebuke, I always butcher his name, but he's a talented guy, and he stepped up too. That you had four guys that it didn't fall off a cliff. So that you get a C+. It's not a bad grade. It's technically slightly above average.
17-year-old Eric would have taken it all day, every day. So
that needs to be a drop all by itself. Oh my god. I like that.
I know, young and limber and naive.
I know what Justin's posting on Instagram for this show.
Oh, that was too good. 23 minutes and 11 seconds. Hang on 1 second. Okay. See, running backs for me is a case of arguing in extremes. It's either an A or an F. Like, I don't see any letter grades in between, especially because now you have service years coming off of these dudes. Like, the window of time of a running back to be efficient enough to get an A is very small, in my opinion. So, it, just like at the Detroit basketball, the Pistons basketball games, when the hype man goes, Detroit, it's a D. It's a D for the running backs. I love Jamal Williams. I love him off the field probably more than on the field. But he's just going to go straight and fall down. And Swift got injured. Like, I can't do anything with that. So I'm just going to give it a D because I want it to be an A, if that makes any sense at all.
Did you start by saying it can either be an A or an F and then give a grade that was neither of those things?
I didn't want to be mean. Okay. I'm feeling a little in my feels today. I can't just go hard F. I did contradict what I said, but I'm like F+. Is that a thing? You get an F+?
Nope. It's a D with a silent F. Okay.
There you go.
Yeah.
I don't know how to follow that.
That was a roller coaster ride. I apologize.
I I get to be the one that I guess kind of goes mid here, because for me, it was I go with a C minus. It was good enough to get you through, and it needs to definitely improve. It's the first thing you'd see on, you know, on a test is C minus, need to improve. And that's fine. We need to get it better. It wasn't enough to ever kill them, but for a while there, they really struggled to run the ball. It was not something they felt comfortable with. And then a light bulb flashed, and they started actually having some success moving the ball in the run game. And over time, I think Campbell got a little too committed to it, to the point of he almost would run the ball four times in a row, and it would still be fourth and seven. So it's like, okay, we need to fix this here, buddy. So for me, I give it a C minus. There's definitely room to improve, but they show signs of having the pieces there necessary to improve. Like Russ said, there aren't too many teams that could say they have four guys that they felt comfortable handing the ball to on any given down and felt that success was there. That doesn't happen very often. So, and not to mention one of those guys is a Swift, who was a, you know, who was a very early pick for us and a guy that we have a lot of high hopes for. So we'll see as it goes. Moving on, we head to the receivers. Guys, I want to point something out. I didn't believe this when I read it, so I had to go to multiple sites to confirm it. Just to confirm it. St. Brown, 90 catches for 912 yards. This man finished literally was just 88 yards shy of a 1,000-yard season.
Bum.
Oh, bum, he says. Where did that come from?
Oh, like, and five touchdowns. TJ Hockenson right behind him, not really right behind him, but technically right behind him in the stat category. 12 games played, 61 catches for 583 yards and four touchdowns. Khalif Raymond rounds it out with 48 catches, 576 yards and four touchdowns, with Swift right behind him with 452 in receiving. This to me, it's weird because the offense was so hit or miss. But this to me is where I think that grade gets pulled up a little bit, because in parts because of Khalif Raymond being a guy that most teams would never even have taken a look at. Yet somehow he always found a way to be a part of this offense and be an effective part of this offense. You add in TJ Hockenson, who literally going into the season knew he had to be the offensive force and still found a way to at least be effective in the games. He got canceled out a lot because of the coverage and the fact that they knew where they wanted to go with the ball, but he still found a way to have a year. Injuries ended it. I think he plays the last 5-6 games of the year. I think we see those numbers. He's not going to catch St. Brown, but he could at least get in striking distance and make it a little more effective. I think he gets another 200 or 300 yards over those last five or six games. And then St. Brown, rookie, comes out, has a big year. The catch to get them their first win, has a big game against Green Bay, is doing everything and anything they ask. This is probably going to be my highest grade of everyone. And again, 3-13 doesn't get you, you know, 4.0 GPAs, unfortunately. This is a B for me. It's a solid B. And it's a B for that exact reason. You take away St. Brown, you take away Khalif Raymond, and you take away TJ Hockenson and what they did for us this year. This is a 0-17 team that probably has the worst offense you could ever imagine. These guys were the key reasons why they have at least a couple wins to boast about, Russ.
Oh, you're right about that part. And I think that's part of my grade, is that they didn't really show up in the first half, and there was, in fact, no wins to show for it subsequently. The second half was absolutely wild, but we brought in Josh Reynolds, right? And he was a bit of an impact there. Really only started five games, but still ended up, I think, fifth on the team in receiving. He could be a piece. Yes. Amon-Ra St. Brown went from Amon-Ra St. Brown to the sun god in the second half. And if I was grading him alone, it'd be an A, but I'm not. It's a group. I'm still giving him a C minus because that first half was an F in my opinion. So even if I give him a good grade in the second, we average out to a C minus there. Yes. And I did separate the tight ends out separately. I don't know if we're going to talk about them later.
We can talk a little more about them. That's fair. And that's the thing no one else realizes is the guy who was supposed to be our number one receiver going into the season, Quintez Cephas, only played five games.
Right.
Like he got knocked out early. So you imagine what this offense looks like with Quintez Cephas, Reynolds, and St. Brown all lining up in that passing attack with a healthy TJ Hockenson. They have pieces that should be effective if all of them can stay on the field, Jay.
Yeah, and there's another part of the field that I think has to be brought up, and it's the quarterback too. Because, like, if I was giving that grade to the actual group of wide receivers, I would ask Jared Goff to come in for a minute and sit in the back of the class. I go, you guys get a C, and I look at Goff and go, minus. Because the minus is Goff's fart. The minus is Goff's fault for the first half of the season there. There has to be accountability for the quarterback with the grouping, just a touch, and that's why the minus goes towards him. The group as a whole, Amon-Ra St. Brown might have almost as much pressure now as Jeff Okuda does next year for expectations. Or maybe you can flip them around a little bit of who's got more pressure, because he just became the piece. And Jeff Okuda still has a higher thing to live up to, too. So I do like that there's a little bit of pressure being applied to St. Brown for next year. So it's serviceable. It's getting there.
That's totally understandable. All right, Rusty, talk to us about the tight ends. You took the time to separate them out, so give us your case for separating them out and why they get a little bit of different grade than the receivers.
Well, you see, you separate the tight ends because that gives you a good extension and lets you isolate the glute muscle on each side. You want to do a deep squat. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. Hockenson alone before he got injured would have been an A. You know, he's rapidly turning into a top five tight end, really, when he had nobody else to draw any attention. However, he didn't. He only played 12 games. Brock Wright stepped up at times, had a, you know, cashed in on a couple touchdowns there, especially at the end. So I give it a B minus because, hey, it looks like going into the year, it was Hockenson and absolutely nothing else. And the only guarantee was that we'll find someone next year. And Brock Wright has stepped in and made his case as one of the backup tight ends. They still need a blocking tight end to fill that other role, but Hockenson took the logical next step that we needed him to. Brock Wright came out of nowhere to fill a roster spot and possibly be a backup piece in the future. That's good enough above average for me that I'm comfortable saying if Hockenson would have, at that pace he was at, played the whole game, he should have been in the Pro Bowl conversation.
Yeah.
So that's at least in the B range on its own.
I completely agree. Look, Brock Wright finished with 12 catches on 17 targets for 117 yards and two touchdowns. That's quite nice for someone that we didn't really have any clue was even on the team before his first game. Yeah, before his first game.
So I just learned who this guy is. I didn't pay attention. I did not know who a Brock Wright was until right now.
Okay, well, we're not going to ask Justin.
Brock wrong.
We're not going to ask Justin to do any grading on the tight ends. But I agree with you, Russ. Hockenson alone helps the team GPA. He's the person that, you know, helped that destroys the curve. Mm. But it's, and I would love to have seen him in a complete year. In all honesty, like, it sounds weird to get excited because we still have a long ways to go. But like I said, you talk about potentially lining up Reynolds, Cephas, St. Brown, TJ Hockenson with Decker and Sewell at the tackles, Frank Ragnow at center. And then you have Jared Goff, who, look, we all know he's not the future of this team, but he's at least the guy next year. That's not a surprise to anyone. And then you talk about having Williams and Swift in the backfield with Craig Reynolds, who's an absolute spark plug. This is an offense that, you know, checks off a lot of boxes. If everybody can stay healthy, this is an offense that's very capable. Now, we're going to get to in a minute the big question marks on the other side of the ball, and that's the defense. but before we get to that, we have to talk about the guys that tried to keep Jared Goff standing upright. Jared Goff finished the season sacked 35 times.
So love it.
Not fantastic. Now, again, you had Ragnow go down. You had Taylor Decker go down. Your starting right tackle was a first round draft pick who then had to go take on the left tackle position. And when Decker was ready to come back, had to go back to right tackle. So you had a guy, you asked a rookie to jump around quite a bit. And then I found out in the last game during the press conference, Jonah Jackson actually jumped in and played center at one point for the Lions. So this was an offensive line that was asked to play all five positions, Russ. So for me, look, 35 sacks is 35 sacks. You got to clean that. It's like the sea. You got to clean that up. But the fact that they had so many different pieces going in and out, and they had so many people have to step up in positions that aren't necessarily their starting position, is the reason that they get the saving, clean it up grade of they'd get a straight down the middle, C. Was not great, but there's so much room for improvement there, and there are so many pieces there that have potential that it's just going to be another year of working together. You have Penei Sewell, who's going to get a whole nother offseason to get better, improving with Ragnow and Taylor Decker, two guys who are tops at their position in the league. So it's they have the nice pieces we've always wanted to have on the offensive line. They just need to clean it up and find a way to stay healthy.
They do. And health is the number one thing. Something that blew me away. The projected starting lineup when they drafted Sewell did not see the field together for a single snap this season. That is outstandingly terrible. And still they piece some things together. I mean, exactly what Eric said. They found a way to get it done. And that's why this is the only position group that I will grade on a curve. Because frankly, it's the only one that I could give enough justification towards giving an incomplete. And I'm not going to. I'm going to give them a B on a curve. Okay. Because they were never all healthy at once. But they did allow the fifth most yards lost due to sacks in the entire league. So those 35 sacks turned into an absolute shit ton of lost yardage. And that's a big problem. But they didn't give up. They were outside of the top 10 for most sacks allowed. So it wasn't happening that often. Just when it did, it really, really hurt. So it's a line that shouldn't have been in flux, and you put them all together. What we saw from Sewell, you put them all together. This could be dangerous. And now you know you have the depth that you can line up Taylor Decker at tight end and throw him a touchdown pass again. And really, isn't that what we're always here for, actually? So I give him a B.
Okay.
We're all floating around the same grades. It's for a lot of things that have already been said, but it's really the health. It's hard to evaluate something when not everything was there. Do I want Goff getting sacked that many times? Yeah. Do I want the team to allow that many sacks in a season? No. At one point, we were tied with the Colts, and we were like in the top two or three in sacks allowed. It was a hot mess. So it's hard to fully do it. I'll play it safe. And the teacher said, you get a C, so you're not passing or failing, because it's didn't smell right.
Didn't pass. Oh my God, man. Okay. Look, it's really hard to grade this because, you know, on that record, you should assume no one passed anything. But at the same time, you have to look at it on a case to case basis and everything that happened throughout the year and how hard they had to work to field the team some weeks. It was that kind of thing. So for them to at least have had a competitive offense most weeks, because like we said, you go back and look at that record, there were three or four games they weren't in from the beginning. And that's, you know, other than that, this was a one score game, late bad decision or a win. So it was one of those things where this record looks so much different under a microscope than it does at a broad view. So, mm-hmm. We'll see what comes out of it. Now, obviously, this is the one that I don't expect anyone to be too generous on. This was a very bad defense this year. Had pieces that showed signs. I will say that. I don't think any of us can say that we weren't a little bit surprised about Oware. I don't think any of us can. I know Russ and I talked about quite a bit. I was kind of impressed with what I saw out of Barnes. He's not ready to be an everyday, you know, line him up and make him the starting guy, but he showed signs of improving in that direction. That defensive line, no one had any expectations for it. And, you know, I saw signs out of Bryant that made me pretty comfortable with him. So there's pieces. Unfortunately, there's not enough pieces. Now, our number one corner in Jeff Okuda not playing all year kind of factors into that. But Tracy Walker got NFC Defensive Player of the Week this past week. So they have the guys in place. They just don't have enough of them. So for that reason, look, they're Detroit Lions, so they're going to get a D from me. They don't necessarily always fail because that defense at least did enough that they didn't get blown out every single week. The problem is they also gave up a 40-yard first down pass that set up a 66-yard or whatever it was field goal by the Ravens. And then the next week gave up another field goal to the Minnesota Vikings. And
an 8-minute drive.
Yeah.
Field goal.
So
8 minutes.
Most games they look great, but the games where the offense put them in a position to win, that defense didn't do its part. Now, they also had weeks where they did. I mean, defense stops, gets a stop. Lions drive down to get their first win of the year. It's that caveat. So you have a lot of improving to do, but you didn't necessarily entirely fail this year. So for that reason, Jay, you get a D.
I get the D. Why do I get the D?
Because you love the D.
You're 17 Eric. 17-year-old Eric would take that all day, every day.
He would take it all day, every day. I'm giving them an F because of that 8-minute drive I was just thinking about. It pops in my head every time I think about the Lions defense. Kirk Cousins should not be afforded 8 minutes to do anything in life. And he's from Michigan State. I do not like him. I do not like the fact that this defense is so inconsistent. Like, Alex Anzalone, I think his name is. I don't want to see his hair flopping in the wind anymore. I'm out on so many pieces. And yes, Jeff Okuda is not there. Yes, Jeff Okuda is supposed to be the centerpiece of that defense in a way. Until we get our edge rusher, which we are going to get next year, those guys can come and go, and I would not lose any sleep. There's a couple pieces I like, but that's not a defense that was supposed to be good. Like, They're not good. Are we getting blown out? No, but we're still losing, so it's enough.
Okay.
So, to be clear, we've completely done away with position groups, and we're just grading the entire defense.
You really want to go through and try to give grades to that entire defense?
I'm just saying you're being efficient, and that's what I appreciate about
you.
Yes,
that's
I appreciate about that, Miss Katie.
Yeah, no we don't problem. Need to spend any more time than is necessary on the team that gave away the second most points in the entire league. But let's keep in mind, last year they were the team that gave up the most points in the history of the NFL.
Love it.
So that's an improvement. So at least it's not an F for me. They weren't the last in anything except for net yards allowed per pass. So that's an improvement. They were bottom 5 in a lot of things, bottom 10 in a lot of things, but not last. And God, is it sad that these words are coming out of my mouth. I'm done talking about it. It was a D+ for me. Still not a good grade, decidedly below average, but not failing finally.
Summer school. They all get summer school. They failed.
You all get summer school.
Can you get an F-? I feel like that should be a new thing.
How would you get less than a failing grade?
You extra failed.
You're on double secret probation.
Yeah.
Extra failed. And then lastly, we didn't punt at all this year, so you can't really grade a punter. And we had seven different field goal kicks. Yeah, he gets an A because of his completion rate, but
what position group are we in?
Kickers and punters.
Kickers and punters.
What?
Yeah.
The special teams guys that you ignore.
We had six different field goal kickers. One of them looked like Mark Rodriguez and couldn't kick the ball more than 10 yards at a time. So at the end of the day, this is where I give an incomplete because we did so little punting and so much going for it on fourth down and trick plays on fourth down that I didn't get a complete look at Fox. And our kickers, Patterson looks great in a short sample size. We'll see what happens next year if they decide to go with them. But we had so many different kickers and so many bad kicking attempts that there's not enough data for me to formulate a grade.
I'll give you some data. I'll data all over the damn place.
Ooh, data all over him right now.
Jack Fox, despite being outside of the top 10 in punts attempts, was 8th overall in net punting yards, the 6th longest punt of the year, 2nd most yards per punt, and 3 completions. Sir, give him an A because I'm giving him an A. Also, Riley Patterson actually solidifying something. That was nice to stop that damn carousel. But the rest of it, if you want to give individual grades, half those guys we've forgotten their names, so that tells you how bad that was.
Absolutely.
Come back home, Prater. Can we start that? Like, he's having some woes in Arizona too, but Jack, also known as Adam Fox and Company.
Also known as
I'm just gonna give them the A. I'm the cool substitute teacher that doesn't give a fuck. A's for you guys. Good job. Go home.
All right. Well, I see him on the computer. I have to assume that he's been calculating and tabulating as we went along here.
I have indeed.
If he hasn't, we'll just omit it out of the episode. But Russ, the overall grades.
Sorry, I need one. I missed your last grade for the kickers and punters.
I said incomplete, but I will be fair, and I will be fair.
Yep.
Yeah, I will be fair, and I will give you something to work with.
Thank you.
I'll give them a B+ because okay. Fox was so good that he just uplifts all the bad kicking we had.
Very fair. Okay. I've even got a weighted average for you guys, so we'll do it that way. Individual sections for the offense. I gave them an average of a C+. So did Eric. Justin a C-. Defense. Yeah. Oof. Defense. I gave them a D+. Well, everyone knows this. D+. D. F. Because we saved a lot of time there, and everyone's paying. Special teams same way. Weighted averages. I had the highest grade at a C+. Thank you, special teams. Eric gave them a C, and Justin a D+ for your D+ Detroit Lions.
And that is another reason why Justin should never be an educator. No one will ever pass his classes. He's just got too high of standards. He really does.
I can't let you move on if you're not allowed to go. You have to stay with me. You keep failing.
That makes no sense whatsoever.
Weird kind of Stockholm syndrome.
That's how school works, right?
Speaking of moving on. There has been quite a few. I know I'm pretty good at this. There has been quite a few rumors that U of M head coach, Michigan legend, if you will, I won't, but you may, Jim Harbaugh could be moving on to the NFL. There's been a lot of speculation. So, I have a very interesting question I want to ask you guys for the end of the segment. So I want to get to it as quick as I can. So Russ, I'll ask you. Likelihood that we don't see Captain Khaki on the sideline next year for Michigan.
Look, it's not zero. It's never going to be zero because I think there's a small part of him that sees his brother in the playoffs regularly and going, damn it, I can do that.
Yeah.
So I'll never put it at zero, but it's super low. I'll put it at 10% if I have to put on a number on it right now. I think there's a better chance he's taken all of this as a tactic to convert some of those bonuses back into salary to get his $4 million salary closer to the $8 million he was making before the extension he signed almost a year ago today.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, does the extension matter to you that he signed it last year for? To take through 2025? Do you really think he would sign that and then just a year later go, see you guys?
No, but I think you don't know what kind of job you're going to get if you get fired and or are asked to leave by the school that's supposed to be your sanctuary can't miss. So I think he played it safe. He got a deal, you know, and let's see what happens. Then he has the year everybody's been waiting for.
Yeah.
Everybody's been waiting to see. So he has that year. And like everyone, you go out there and go, well, I just did really good. Why am I only getting this? I want more. Give me more. So, yes, I think he is potentially using this as a like, well, I have an opportunity to go to Las Vegas, or I have a chance to go to Miami. I mean, I could do it. And the issue with that is Michigan has to be ready to call the bluff and be like, okay. Because that's the thing. Like, yes, did you just have a great year? Yeah, you did. You did it once in 6 years. Got to do it a couple more times, man. Like, well, you want to talk about more money? That's fine. Do what you just did again, and we can start talking about money. We can start working out, because then it will be, you know, a validated thing. But if he renegotiates this and gets it back to where it was before all of this, and then goes out and has an 8-4 season next year, Michigan's going to fire him, and it's going to look even worse, because then he's going to be back to saying, hey, you think I could get a job with you in Baltimore? I need a job. Like, could you hire me for a little while?
Tail between the legs.
Yeah. So that's why I'm saying, like, I agree with you, Russ. I think a lot of this is a tact, but I think it's also Harbaugh knowing that he took a 49ers team all the way to the Super Bowl and just fell short, and then it all kind of fell apart, knowing that he just did all the work with Michigan. I think, you know, it's second nature to kind of always be like, I could take that job and do a good job. But the thing I don't think people realize is I don't think Harbaugh's in the mood for another 4 years of building again. He's already built. It's the same reason why every year you hear, oh, Nick Saban's going to go to the NFL. No, he's not.
Yeah,
Nick Saban just spent the last decade building a juggernaut that doesn't lose very often. He's not going to go back to, you know, try to rebuild the Miami Dolphins or try to fix the Chicago Bears. He has no interest in that. Where, you know, so I think that's why I think Harbaugh found where he's perfect at. He's just got to finish the build, and it's a lot less of a build in Michigan than it is to go do this in the NFL.
But if he goes to Jacksonville, he can take Hutchinson with him.
It's true. It's very true.
Yeah, very true. I hope he does. I think that he shows up, he climbs trees, he does sleepovers with kickers, and he tries to do Dancing with the Stars light in Ann Arbor and have some big gala for signing day. Like, he was a sideshow that turned into a failure that stumbled upon a really nice job of winning the Big Ten championship. And I think that's the ceiling for the Big Ten. Your goal is to win the Big Ten championship because you're never going to touch the Natty. So if I was him, I'd leave. I think it's 50-50 because I don't think he's in a lose-lose situation. He either is going to get a bunch of money, he thinks he's owed with Michigan, or he can go to the NFL and go out high. So I think he's in a great spot. I think he leaves. I don't know if there's an appetite for anything under now a Big Ten championship for Ann Arbor. What are you going to do, lose to Ohio State and Michigan State, and that's the floor? So your floor is one win separated from the ceiling or two wins separated from the ceiling? He's got a very tight window, I feel like. If I was him, I'd leave. I appreciate the joke of himself that he made for a couple of years, but now go try to do something. And he's just a weird dude. Just go do it in the NFL now. Take it out of the Big Ten if you're going to be weird still.
It's not going to fly with 30-year-old, you know, all-pro quarterbacks that are
making
$20 million plus a year. They're not going to be like, coach, can you get down from the tree? We got to go through plays.
No, yeah. Mesh point. Let's go. That's what he's going to do.
Yeah.
Like Russ said, there's you can't ever say it's a 0% chance because that's not the case. Some team could be dumb enough to offer him more money than anyone ever should for a head coach, and he might take it, especially since you got to think he's been in the Big Ten a little while. He knows what he's getting if he goes to Chicago with Fields. Heck, he was the starting quarterback in Chicago for years. So there's something there. He's been, you know, in these situations where he knows these guys. He was a head coach in California for multiple years. He knows what Derek Carr is capable of doing. You know, he's seen Trevor Lawrence for all 4 years of his college. Heck, he probably tried to recruit Trevor Lawrence at some point to Michigan. It didn't happen. So yes, there are these spots. So we'll see what comes of it. But I think this is much more of a, I'm going to test the waters and see what there is, but let's be honest, I'm going to stay where I am. You know, I'm not going anywhere.
Question for the both of you, because you're the actual U of M fans here. Just real quickly, because I just thought of it. If he leaves, are you sad first? Or are you taking an exhale, like a release moment when he goes? What happens first?
I'm uncertain first. I can't fully react until I know who is filling the next spot. Because I remember Rich Rod. I remember him coming in and replacing, because when it comes down to it, Lloyd Carr and Jim Harbaugh, not all that different when it comes to results. So is the next guy going to come in like that? Do they just bump Josh Gattis up? Then I might exhale a little bit because I don't have to worry about what our milkbag body coach does next. But I'm going to be sad first, and I'm going to be uncertain shortly after that. There's in no way is there going to be thank God he's gone, because I've seen what's behind door number two, and it's 10 years of Sparty fans shitting on us.
Yeah. And see, I don't think that happens for that exact reason. I think Michigan doesn't run the risk of bringing in a high profile big name that could potentially want to just rework everything for themselves, because let's be honest, if Rich Rod was that big of an offensive genius, which he was supposed to be, he could have easily said, okay, I've got a 6'5 quarterback who can throw at the length of the field but can't run 10 yards in 10 minutes. Maybe I shouldn't go with the spread option offense. Maybe for a couple of years I should spread it out and start slowly working the pieces in. But no, he said, nope, we're only doing this. And that's what they're afraid of. They don't want that to happen. So I think I think it's more likely you see D coordinator or offensive coordinator bumped up, because there won't be that much of a culture change. The offense won't change a bit. The defense won't change a bit. There might be a little tinkering here or there, but nothing that's going to be a total remodel where we're starting from zero again. But so I think I'm with Russ on that. It would take me a minute until I see what they're going to do, because we all remember, you know, Brady Hoke and Rich Rod, and we remember those painful, painful games. I mean, this is Michigan, for crying out loud.
This is Michigan
for crying out loud. But I don't think I would be too beat up, because since they hired him, and I have said this, you know, every week when I talk sports on the shows at the station, I have said it with you. I think Jim Harbaugh is a great coach, and I think he was the guy that was right to turn this around. But I have never bought in that Jim Harbaugh is the guy that's going to bring multiple titles to the University of Michigan. I think Jim Harbaugh, like Justin said, I think Jim Harbaugh has kind of walked right up to what his ceiling is in Michigan. That's not to say that he might not catch a fluke year and maybe Michigan wins a national championship. Maybe. I think it would take a lot of things falling into place for that to happen. But he can definitely be the guy that year in and year out Michigan competes, if not wins Big Ten championships. So if that's okay with him, if winning, you know, Big Ten titles, being an 11-1, maybe sometimes 12-0 team is good for him, competing every year for a national championship and maybe every so often checking that box. You know what I see him being? And Jay, you're not going to like this comparison because of the history. I see him being Tom Izzo. Always be great, title every once in a while.
Take those goddamn words back and put them in your mouth.
What's that?
You don't have a month named after you. January, okay. February. Should I keep going?
Yeah, keep going. Keep going.
Don't know. Izzo is a couple steps ahead of.
Never Captain said Weirdo never Man's. Said that's who he is, but I said that's what I see him being. Izzo is one of the greatest basketball coaches in the history of the game. How many national championships does he have? I'm pretty sure he's only got two, maybe even just one with Mateen Cleaves.
It's two. Now, but you just compared Phil Mickelson to fucking Stuart Sink. Like, those,
you made that name up. There's no.
No, that's a real golfer.
Stuart Sink actually beat my dad's favorite golfer in the 2009 Open Championship. So yeah. Which would have been one of the greatest wins on PGA Tour history.
Daniel Berger, Phil Mickelson. That's what you
Daniel. Mean. Stop making up names.
No, these are actual names. But
Berger, I just think no. You're looking at your kitchen and naming things.
Go. You have a computer in front of you. Go ahead and look right now.
I do. I will not.
C-I-N-K. Sink.
At least it's spelled different.
Fine, Jim Furyk.
Not heard that one.
Also, but I'm just saying, I see him as that, like. Always going to be in the hunt, always going to be competitive, but never going to be that guy that you can say is the undisputed, always favorite to win the national championship every year. Going to be in the conversation, never going to be Nick Saban. Saban is Krzyzewski. Krzyzewski is Saban. Those two link together that way. Izzo and Harbaugh.
See, I put money on the fact that Harbaugh never does that again, what he just did.
Okay. You love to bet. I'll make that bet with you. We're going to know each other.
Gentlemen's arrangement.
Yeah, huzzah over here, my friend. But that's where I'm sitting with it. I think that's where it's at. So that's why I don't think he ever goes anywhere. I think he stays. He knows what job he has. As long as he keeps them winning and keeps them competitive, Michigan's not going to, you know, walk away from him. They love it. They love the story. This feeds that Michigan man culture that the University of Michigan wants. So I'm sorry to upset you with the whole Tom Izzo thing. I think the world of Tom Izzo. Tom Izzo is one of the greatest coaches, and he had to do it in one of the toughest times, because you look at the coaches
you
he had to
go
against every year. I do. You look at the coaches he had to coach against in his generation. He had one of the toughest stretches of guys to go against, and he always seemed to be coming out on top or being at least competitive in it. So I'm not trying to offend you at all. I'm just trying to make the point of when you look back at Izzo's career, there's a lot of accolades, but that big win that everybody wants, he doesn't, it's not like he's got 10 of them sitting in the cabinet. He's got a couple, and that's more than enough, but it's still a top tier program. That's what I see.
I'm just going to hit you with the Alan Lazard from Sunday and just go boop.
Okay. That's right. All right, gentlemen. We want to get out of the Yes, we want to get on to the other topics, so I'm gonna ask you guys this. We're talking about Harbaugh leaving. I don't think he's leaving. None of us think he's leaving. But let's just say, for argument's sake, Jim Harbaugh does decide Michigan's not for me anymore. I need to move on. Justin, when you look at what's available, and the Texans did fire their head coach today, so that job is available. You look at it. You've got the Vegas Raiders, the Denver Broncos, the Jacksonville Jaguars, Miami Dolphins, Chicago Bears, Minnesota Vikings, New York Giants, Houston Texans, and I love that they put it on here, potentially the Seattle Seahawks. I don't see that happening, but we'll see what happens. What is the job? What is the best job available right now if you're going to go take a head coaching job? Assuming all jobs are equal and they're all looking at you.
Atlanta Thrashers.
Okay.
Miami Dolphins. I want to see him go to Miami. And
gee, I wonder why he's picking that.
Yeah. Like, did you ever need to see? Reasons,
I would bet.
I have a couple of reasons, but
Tua of them.
Yeah, there are two of them. Tua Tagovailoa. If he's gonna, you know, everyone's shitting on Tua this year. Maybe he's a quarterback whisperer again. He can fix Tua. I also want to see Harbaugh in like khaki shorts. And maybe just like aggressive sunglasses and like maybe like a visor instead of a hat. Like, I want to see Miami Beach Harbaugh because I've gotten cold winter Michigan Harbaugh. I need like more dude bro Harbaugh.
So instead of bundled up gym, you want beach bum gym.
I want some beach bum gym.
You know what I love about this, Russ, is I kind of knew that's where he was going to go, but I love that he loves this guy so much and he can't even pronounce his actual last name.
That's never stopped him before.
Harbaugh.
No. Tua.
Oh, Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah, let's go with that.
He's got a brother and he plays at Rutgers. I've had to say his name all year.
For now.
For now. Russ, when you look at this, what is the best available job in the NFL right now?
I mean, the best available job, if I'm a head coach, I'm probably the Raiders because they're in the playoffs, right? But who knows if that job's actually going to be open with their interim guy. I want to lean the Jags because, hey, they have a presumably franchise quarterback in place and the rest of these teams don't, right? And that's half the battle in and of itself. And you have an owner who is aggressive and willing to pay. So, hey, you're going to line your pockets. But he's also willing to go get stuff done. He'll sign the big contract. He'll bring people in. He'll bring in good assistants. As long as you point them in the right direction there. So that if you get the right person in there to build a good structure, that could be a hell of a cherry spot to line up. For Harbaugh specifically, though, it's the Bears. He's going to grow out that Ditka mustache. We know he loves a homecoming story because he's already written one. And he'll go back to the Bears. He'll wear nothing but sweater vests and just an awful little caterpillar on his lip every week. That's the only place he'd go, I think. That's the only place he'd go if he leaves Michigan.
Well, I was going to say, assuming Rodgers doesn't stay after this year, I think that Bears job looks pretty mint because the NFC North would be wide open. I think Minnesota has a lot of offensive talent. They just have no guy that can be consistently trusted to get the football to that offensive talent. So yeah, they'd have to solve that problem. And they have a little bit of an aging defense. So they have some questions to work out there. You look at Chicago, you have Fields, who presumably is the guy. It just depends on, you know, who you ask. They have talent on that team. They have the potential to be a solid football team. And like I said, the NFC North's wide open. Jacksonville, yes, you want to assume Trevor Lawrence is the future of that team. That still remains to be seen. I wouldn't touch the New York Giants with a 10-foot pole. I would take Saquon Barkley from them if they would like that, but I wouldn't touch them with a 10-foot pole. And then you look at the Texans. I don't know anyone that takes that job knowing full well you might not have a franchise quarterback next year. You might be entering a very, very messed up situation. So assuming all these jobs are open, it's Oakland. Or it's not Oakland. I'm sorry. It's Las Vegas. It's Las Vegas. You have a franchise quarterback who's more than capable. You have offensive weapons. You have a running back who's solid. You have a top three or four tight end in the league. You have a defense that's got a lot of pieces on it. It's the Raiders. The Raiders are your best chance because, like you guys said, they're in the playoffs. Assuming they even get knocked out in the first round, you're going into a division with the Denver Broncos, who are looking for a head coach and have a lot of questions to fill, like who the hell is going to be their quarterback. Kansas City's always going to be a problem, but it's a problem you can start chipping away at. And I believe the Chargers are the last one in that division. Yep. The Chargers are might be the best team in that division when it's all said and done with all the weapons they have and the fact that they've got an amazing young quarterback. So it's a division that's still open for grabs, but it's a very competitive division. And I think if you're Harbaugh, that's what you want. You want competition, and it's the least amount of building you have to do for that team. So I would say it's the Raiders, but I also agree. The homecoming story, the Bears, it's very possible.
I hate it. I hate that so much. I didn't know I hated it until now.
Duh, Harbaugh.
Like, we already have one comical joke in the NFC North. Like, I don't need another. Oh my, I hate that. I don't like that.
Yeah, and then it'll be a Wolverine coaching a Buckeye at quarterback.
Not good at all. All right, moving on. We've got a little bit left to talk about before we wrap up this one. Next up is the conversation of last week. We get the news. Pistons have traded Rodney McGruder, and I believe it was a second round pick, to the Denver Nuggets for 7'2". Bol Bol. If that name sounds familiar, that's because his dad, Manu Bol, played back in the 80s and 90s and was one of the tallest players ever to play in the league. He was also probably the lightest person to ever play in the league, because if you saw him, he was very, very skinny, as is his son. Looked like a great deal for the Pistons. You're getting a lot of size, adding a little bit more to that paint to get rebounds so this team can keep doing what they like to do, which is shooting from a little bit outside. Don't really like to bring the ball in if they don't have to. And Bol is a great guy to get for that. You don't have to expect a lot out of him. Just get the rebound. That's what we need. Putbacks are phenomenal. Well, that fell through after Bol could not pass his physical. So Russ, when you look at this, I mean, it stinks a little bit, but at the same time, like when I heard that, I was like, okay, like this wasn't the guy that was going to turn the team around. So it's like, okay, that stinks. Does anybody else want to trade for McGruder? Anyone?
Please.
I mean, we're still willing to get rid of him. But also, how awkward is it to be Rodney McGruder going, I'm back.
Hi, guys.
Or come on in, buddy. We do like you.
Hi, guys. So it's a weird thing. But at the same time, like when that flashed across the screen, I was like, oh, darn. Unsubscribe to Manute Bol. Or, I mean, to Bol Bol.
I'm done. Unfollow.
You know what I mean? It didn't really get me in a way that I was like, shucks, that's what we needed.
Right. I mean, the things that he offers are things that the Pistons need, but he's not offering them at a magnitude that, like you said, is going to be the difference. I mean, if he changed the win total by one win, that would be more than I would expect. But you need rim protectors. You need guys that are the third guy, fourth guy off the bench to play. And he could have been that in a very interesting kind of fan favorite way. So I'm sad about that. I was a little bummed to see that, but this Cade's going to be the reason this team is different. Whoever they pick in the top five this year is going to be the difference. Sadiq Bey is going to be the difference. Bol Bol, it was going to sell some jerseys.
Yeah,
because he'd be a fan favorite, but that's it. He playing 5-6 minutes a night. That's what he's been playing the last 2 years. Yeah.
Jay, you like to latch on to fan favorites that no one understands. Why? What did this do to you? Finding out that 7'2" Bol Bol wasn't going to be here for you.
The fan favorite's there, but you're looking in the wrong direction. I was more concerned with Troy Weaver. I don't know if he's had something not go his way yet. I felt like if I had his number, I'd be like, you all right?
Okay,
like,
yeah.
Are you good? Because you just had something you committed to. Someone told you no. I don't think Troy Weaver has been told no yet in terms of success of moving things around. So I was more worried about Troy than McGruder. That's weird. But Bol Bol never happened. I don't care anymore. Weaver, I hope you're okay, man.
I think he's going to be just fine. The guy's angling towards having another top three pick this year. So he's going to get to keep building this. And see, that's the other reason I'm kind of okay with it is like, I think if Bol Bol comes to this team and he's here, I think that maybe they are like, they look off getting a player of size and maybe going more for skills. You still want to go for skill, but if you can find a guy like, I'm blanking on the name you mentioned, Russ, the guy of Auburn, or the guy that's at Duke who's 6'11". Yeah, the guy that's 6'11 at Duke. I think, like, if you get a guy like Bol Bol, you're going to start looking, oh, maybe we want more like a small forward or a shooting guard or something, as opposed to maybe getting that skill guy who could still play the 3, 4, and 5. So
Jabari Smith.
Thank you. So there's a potential for, you know, like Bol Bol not being here kind of opens up that thing of now we scout all 5 positions as opposed to maybe just, you know, 1, 2, and 3. So go ahead, Jay.
Wild dart throw. If we would have drafted Obi Toppin, does any of this happen right now? Because he was the athletic dude. I don't know how he's doing for the Knicks, but does Obi Toppin fit?
I'm going to look right now because I remember watching a game the other night, and I'm pretty sure Obi Toppin is just awful.
Oh, don't do that.
He's not doing great. I did see him in a proposed Jeremy Grant trade as a half throw-in piece, as a prospect that could be something.
That's so not great.
Right now, just to give you it is. Obi Toppin is averaging 7.9 points a game, 3.7 rebounds, and 1 assist. Yeah, that's not good, Jeff.
Over how many minutes a game, does it say?
It does not say.
Okay.
I'm sure I could track it down if you give me 1 minute. Oh, averaging about 16 minutes a game.
Ooh.
So, yeah. Last, they played the Mavs the other night, and they won 108-85. Toppin played 11 minutes and had just 2 points on one of three shooting. So he's skilled, but he's not a guy that I don't think we're building the franchise around Obi Toppin. Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. I thought Will Grier was going to be the best quarterback in the league, and he's like the fourth stringer in Carolina right now, on Carolina, where they could use a quarterback. So it's okay. We all swing and miss every once in a while. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it's tough, but that Rush, you actually kind of touched on what I want to talk about with this team kind of being in that, you know, dip towards the top three pick. Is this a point where we want to see this? We want to see Troy Weaver keep building and keep adding and keep making moves. Is this kind of where he's getting that position of Jeremy Grant's the one asset we have? Let's stock up where we can stock up.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Jeremy Grant, pack your bags. Thank you for your service. I'll always be a fan, but it's time to go. Man, it is time to go and get some pieces. I don't know what you guys are looking for in a return from him, but I'm looking for a first round pick, an intriguing prospect, and whoever it needs to be to match salaries. The worse they are, the better, so that those first two things are good. But if I'm not getting a first round pick and an interesting piece, I don't care. Patrick Williams from Chicago, like a guy like that.
Yeah.
Go get him.
The only reason I think, and I agree with the talent and what he's capable of drawing. I just, when you start talking about a first round pick, because there are only 2 rounds in the NBA, mm-hmm. that pick is so much more valuable that, when you start thinking about it, I can only think of maybe 4 or 5 teams that could stand to go without a first round pick and still be competitive. And the problem with that is all 4 or 5 of those teams are, it's going to be the end of the first round. So you're getting talent, but you're not even remotely guaranteed to get Jeremy Grant talent back on that.
Well, and that was kind of my assumption, is that whoever's trading for him is going to be at the very least in the second half of the first round. So that pick is not guaranteed to even get you a replacement level player. It's not even guaranteed to get you a bench rotation guy.
That's why I would almost feel better like avoiding the picks altogether and just going 1 for 1 here. I'll give you Jeremy Grant. You give me insert name here of guy that fills a need for us, is still talented. He's not done, but you know, Jeremy Grant's going to get the draw. So yeah, you maybe get a prospect or a second round pick, but give us a guy who's just not working out for you for reasons, and we'll give you Jeremy Grant and we'll work from there kind of thing. That's how I feel about it. It's a tough one because Jeremy Grant's actually very good for this team. And if it turned around, he would be one of the guys that's helping to turn it around, but I don't see it turning around this year. So you just gotta, it's one more year. You got to risk not having him around.
Have we thought about sending him to the Lakers so that he can destroy the locker room, and LeBron can't win this year.
Why would he destroy the locker room?
Because him and LeBron, got after it. Yeah,
That locker room, it was actually Isaiah Stewart that he fought, but
shit.
But that locker room is going to tear itself apart anyway. It's awful. So
delete.
Yeah,
didn't happen.
Edit button.
It's live, but delete it.
See for clean it up.
All right, boys, because we want to get to bet of the week, we got to talk about our Red Wings as we do every week. This is a team of like, I honestly feel like this is a team of game to game. Like one night I turn them on and they're in it all the way. It looks great. Next night I turn it on and they get shellacked, and then I'll turn it off for 2 minutes and I turn it back on and they've scored three goals to be tied again. This is a team of, for lack of a better word, very little consistency in the finished product from night to night. That's how I would describe it. Dylan Larkin leading the team with 32 points. Raymond right behind him with 30. Tyler Bertuzzi finishes out the top three at 28. Bert is still leading the team in goals, 17. Larkin's got 16. Two players tied with 10. Mo Sider, 21 assists. Lucas Raymond right behind him with 20. These are some great rookies. I love these rookies. I'm a big fan of them. I want to keep them forever. Obviously, the big story right now, Nick Lindstrom. That's right. Number five, back in with the franchise. And no one was more excited about that than me. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know Nick Lindstrom is my favorite player. So
had to celebrate. Yeah, sorry.
It's so great. Jay, when you look at this, like this, it has the feeling of all the right pieces are coming back to this town to maybe start rebuilding what they were a part of in the beginning. What does this Nick Lindstrom addition mean for this team?
I texted it with you guys and I'll say it again. It's either the highest level of nepotism or you're getting all the right pieces for a certain reason. Like we're watching our heroes put suits on instead of skates. So I love it. It means that he's buying a house. He's going to be in Detroit. Like you're not just going to fly back and forth. Like this is going to be Nick Lidstrom time again. And I can't wait to see him. Like even if it's just like a PR video, something stupid they put on Instagram, you know, Yuri Fisher going over to player development, Draper coming in, working with the administration, like all these names get brought in because they know how hockey works and they know talent. So you can only have confidence in him coming back to the organization. So you have to crack a beer. You just got to be happy. It's a nice thing to see.
We have been recording for almost an hour and a half. That beer has been sitting there this entire time waiting, hasn't it?
You guys are focusing on all the wrong details in the presentation right now. Yeah, it's a
commitment, though. It's impressive.
I'm amazed that beer even made a noise when you opened it. Like,
right?
That thing,
yeah. It just didn't go, oh, finally.
I've been playing with this thing for an hour and 17 minutes. I was waiting
There's your drop.
God, 117.52. Yeah. Okay, there we go. Okay. Sorry, go ahead, Ross.
We got a little off track, but it's exciting, and I don't want to make the assumption that Hall of Fame player means Hall of Fame front office person because hey, see Gretzky, Wayne, it does not always work out, no matter how good you are. However, if I can put on my born in 1989, watched the back to back cups as a child hat, this is my heroes walking off Field of Dreams style, watching their uniforms turn into suits. And it's not to save a little girl's life, but it is to save the life of our Stanley Cup hopes.
Oh, poetic.
And that's what it feels like. It's exciting. It's the same role that Yzerman was in when he first started. And let that sentence wash over you for a second. Oh. It's the same track Yzerman had followed.
Now I'm like of the three of us, hockey would be the sport that I go to you guys for in all this. But does it say anything to you that arguably the greatest defenseman to ever play this game is coming back to this franchise when you have a top prospect defenseman doing well in this league? And oh, by the way, your first pick in last year's draft was a Swedish defenseman?
Weird.
Is this meaning something to anyone? So does it say something to you, Russ, that our last two top picks were defensemen or two picks that are, you know, ready to go are these top defensemen that we kind of want to see build. And the guy we're bringing in to be a part of this franchise. Now, again, he's got a bigger role than just mentoring two guys, but he's going to be in the building. He's going to be around. Does it say something that these two big guys are about to get the greatest to ever do it a hallway away from them?
It says that since Steve Yzerman took this position, his one goal has been to bring Nick Lidstrom into the organization. And I am going to draft as many effing defensemen as it takes to bring him in. No, if all Nick does is sit next to Moritz Seider and Simon Edvinson once, twice a week and give them pointers, that he's paid his salary. And that part alone. Hell yeah, I'm excited about that. If he does nothing else except for that. And he said he's going to start the season working over in Sweden.
Edmondson, he's still over there.
Still in Sweden. So
Can we add one thing? Let's add one thing to that. He's got to look at Gustav Lindstrom and go, don't fuck it up. Because now you have a Lindstrom and a Lidstrom. I'm like Mr. Lidstrom, yes, yeah. Funny, not you, young man. I'm Mr. Lindstrom.
Oh, let's be honest. There's no Mr. Lindstrom. It's legend. Yes, right here.
Legend. Yeah. The perfect human. Yes.
Yeah.
He's going to walk up to Gustav, grab the end of his nameplate, rip it right off, and go, now you play better, sir.
You have to earn that shit, son.
No, I like it. I do like it because it is, like you said, it is pointing that. Since day one of taking this job, Yzerman knew who he wanted in this front office with him. It was just a matter of getting it. But then you bring in a guy like Mo Sider, who is having success. By the way, took a puck off the neck the other night and was back like 10 minutes later killing people. So yep. I appreciate him for that. And then you have a guy like Edvinson who's sitting there in Sweden. You don't know how much longer till we'll see him, but you have to assume he's going to start making appearances in America here any day now, at least time and again. Yeah, fingers crossed. So when your eyes are in, that call is pretty easy. You go, hey buddy, remember how we won all those cups together by putting the right players in the right place to succeed and we had people mentoring us? Yeah, okay, I got two really good defensemen. Get your ass over here. Like I need you to show them how to do this in a way, because one of them can already knock people out, you know, when he checks them. But I wouldn't mind him also knowing how to take the puck away from them without ever touching them. You were pretty good at that. Maybe you could teach him that. So I do like it for that. And it's a lot of fun to see. Now, I told you guys a couple weeks ago, before we get to Sergeant Salty's Bet of the Week, I was going to ask you both this question every week until it was either mathematically impossible or automatically decided. Russ, is this a playoff team?
No. Oh, still no. I'm consistent. No, I don't think. They have won one game since December 18th. Mm-hmm. No.
What?
Justin, is this a playoff team?
Tuca's playing tonight. Gino is back. He got me 3 points in fantasy.
Oh, good for you.
Brian Rust is on a heater and on the COVID list, but
just reading his fantasy lineup at this point.
I am. I've got all those people on my team. I'm going to still say yes, but I'm starting to get worried about down the middle. Yeah. Larkin's got 32 points in 32 games. The rest of the collective centers on our team have 64 points in 146 games. The centers, there's four of them. That's a problem. So I'm going to die on this hill and probably be wrong, but I'm going to say yes, they're a playoff team.
Okay.
It's going to be so tight dealing with Boston and Pittsburgh, though.
I'm going to invoke my editorial button and say I'm going to leave that answer blank until the end of the year, and then I'll fill it in. I'm going to say no. I've been optimistic and been saying yes that I think they are, but I think we're that one win in like the last month is kind of a little bit of a deterrent. But the other thing to me is I think we're rapidly approaching that point where I don't think the floor is going to fall out altogether, but I think we're going to start seeing some dips. We're going to start seeing a week. I hope it doesn't happen. I really don't. I think we're going to start seeing a week or maybe two or three games where Raymond and Sider don't do much of anything. They're out there and they're playing, but they just, they don't contribute like you want them to. And it's going to be on Larkin to have to, you know, do a little more. And that role we talked about where him kind of being able to be a facilitator worked in his benefit of being a scorer. I think we're going to start seeing that fall off a little bit. And it's going to be more of Larkin having to try to go coast to coast and do some stuff that he's maybe not comfortable for or comfortable with. So I just think it's going to be one of those ones where I think they're going to be close, but I think they're going to fall short this year and it's going to be unfortunate. So I'm going to say no, talk to you about it in a week. Maybe all of our opinions will have changed. You never know. Favorite time of the show. Everybody enjoys it. Apparently he's going to like wreck all of us this week. So I'm curious to see what happens. It is Sergeant Salty's Bet of the Week.
Yeah. I'm a little bit of mind games here. First of all, recapping where we're at, Russ and Eric, you guys won last week and I lost. I took Tampa Flames over 6. Steelers won outright, so that was a victory for Russ. And the Grizzlies more than covering 13 points against the Pistons in that game. So congratulations, good sirs. I would like to point out – oh, go ahead, Russ.
Yeah. Oh, no, what's my record? That's what I was hoping you're getting
to. Yeah. Russ is at a perfect mid 10-10. Yeah. I'm at 11-9, so I had a little bit of a drop off. And Eric at 8-12. We're kind of snoozing in together.
I'm climbing.
I love it. What I've got planned for you guys this week. I put in some bets last night because Austin Matthews is playing in Arizona, right? I took him for 2 goals. I took him for 3 goals. It was plus like 3,700. He got 1 and the team had 47 shots on against Arizona. Pissed me off. So that was dumb, right? I do dumb things sometimes. So here's tonight's games, right? Here's tonight's bets. I have mystery prize in this hand.
Oh my God.
And there's multiple options within it. And it's kind of like the same thing I was doing last night between 2 goals, 3 goals, getting cute. Or you got to pick a spread in some of the toughest wild card matchups this weekend. So it ain't easy.
The spread choices then I'm assuming are all NFL games.
Yes, wild card NFL games, or you got to go into this mixed bag of bullshit that I tried to do last night that maybe you guys will have more success with.
And that is going to be NHL games, or is that a
mix? It is. It's going to be NHL only. So it's NHL, NFL. NFL spreads or NHL craziness? Oof. I'm going to give you the spreads first. I'm not going to tell you what's behind NHL craziness doors, okay? Your spreads are only 2 of them. You got to either take or give points in the Bills-Pats game, which is the line's at 4 right now. The Bills getting 4 points before they take on Mac Jones. Or the Dallas Cowboys, 3.5 against the Niners. So you can pick either way. I'll give you that leniency. Or you got to go into this mixed bag of nuts I got over here for you. So again, Bills -4 or Pats +4. Dallas 3.5 against the Niners. Or mixed bag of crazy.
All right. So I can technically, according to what you just said, I can take the Bills to beat the Pack or maybe the Pats, and I can give 7 if I want. Or do I have to give 4?
You have to go to the line. You gotta take the spread.
Go to the line. Okay. Well, because I was gonna say
You feel convicted to go Pats +4, by all means I'll let you do that too. I think those lines are so neck and neck.
I personally think that the Pats need to be given 7 for that to even be a close game, because I think the Bills are going to win by 2 touchdowns on that one. Well,
if you'd like to go to the wild card madness, because I don't feel comfortable in that game, you can take that if you want.
I like that. I'll take the Bills getting 4. That seems like a very safe thing to do.
I'm gonna change one rule real quick for both of you. If you go into my mixed bag of nuts, you get 2 wins instead of 1. If anything hits out of the four options in that mixed bag of nuts, you get 2 instead of 1. And Eric, you are 2 away from the lead.
Yeah, okay, I'll take the mixed bag of nuts.
I got him. Hook, line, and sinker. You're going to hate it. Russ.
Oh, I got a dollar. Oh, I got a dollar.
Russ, are you playing with the wild card this weekend? Or do you want my mixed bag of nuts as well?
Hey, sir, you can keep your nuts to yourself.
Okay, sorry.
I will take the Bills and I'll be lame, because now I don't feel compelled to reveal what's behind door number 2 because Eric has volunteered so graciously to do that. So I'll take the Bills.
right, Russ going Bills minus four. They got to cover with a touchdown or some other wacky scoregami bullshit. Eric, my mixed bag of nuts. There's actually not a lot of nuts in it. It's more licking inside this bag. That licking coming courtesy of Brad Marchand this evening. Marchand had a hat trick last night. I picked the wrong player and had the right amount of goals. So I need you to now go with either Marchand gets two goals tonight at plus 700. Marchand gets another hat trick to make it back to back at plus 3,700. Or you got to take Marchand at least getting 3 points tonight at plus 800. Long odds to get 2 points.
I didn't hear a word you just said. No, all I heard was Brad Marchand a lot.
Marchand getting 3 points. Marchand scoring two goals. Marchand scoring three goals.
And who are the Bruins playing to help him out there?
COVID-riddled Philadelphia. So you do get a little bit of a kicker there.
Okay.
No Konechny, Carter Hart in net, and he's been god-awful.
Okay. Yeah, give me the two goals. I think that'll happen.
Going mid. He's going mid on us. He's going mid on us.
Okay. It's possible.
I hope he gets one goal and two assists.
Well, Eric, if he scores two, you are also getting two, my friend, and you would be tied with Russ. So let's see what happens here.
I think I'll be okay. I'm not too worried about it. As usual, Justin's bets make no sense, and we're looking into new segments. If you have any ideas, please let us know. We'd love to pass that along.
Love it.
You know, Jay, I'm going to actually defer to you. I this was a great show, but Russ didn't throw us anything that I can throw some numbers at him. So, like, what do we got for Russ? What's a good little number question we can get from Russ this week, Jay? Other than why math?
How many points does Jacob Verana have to score to consider it a success at his shortened season?
Okay.
Ooh, I don't know how many games he's going to play.
Correct.
So I can't cop out and say
I'm actually trying to stump you.
Yeah, a 0.75 point per game season would be what I expect him to do. To just be considered a success, if he's playing, right? We'll say 0.6 points per game pace. And then we'll say that he gets at least 20 games. So 12 points. So I'll say in that 12 to 15 point range is what I want to see, because I need to see him come back and not be like, oh shit, what happened to Verana? This season, they're not going to be a playoff team with him because there's not enough runway anyways. So just show me some signs of life. Show me that he's still got that shot, that he hasn't lost that from, I believe it was a wrist injury he's been, or a shoulder injury rather, that's been holding him out. As long as he's still got that, I'm fine. I'll see your 30 goals next year.
I got a question that should make this very easy for you.
Uh-oh.
Assuming he comes back tonight or tomorrow, whenever their next game is. Like, okay. And this isn't going to happen, but assume he does. How many games do you think he needs to actually catch and pass Philip Zadina for points on this? Four goals, six assists for 10 points in 35 games.
Oh, poor Zadina. Look, he's having trouble finishing. He's still a good player. He's just... stop putting him on the fourth period, on the fourth line. Like, I don't understand that part.
So what I'm hearing out of this is 10 games. Gotcha. Thanks.
No, eight games likely. Eight games. Realistically, 15 games and he'll pass him. Because I think they'll play together. Ah. So it'll take a little bit longer.
Okay. That's fair. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. As always, tried to cover everything. If we missed anything, let us know. Sure, Justin's going to be posting some awesome sound bites here in the next couple of days, because if you listen to the show, we definitely gave him some stuff to work with. My thanks as always to Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus.
Hey, have a good one. I didn't bet any of these bets, and I didn't even pick one in the segment this week, so surprise, surprise.
Oh dear God. And as always, the stat man Russ Ivanek, I gotta thank him for making us sound a lot smarter than we really are.
Oh, it was a blast again. Can't wait for next week. Chop it up more. And as I go, congratulations, breaking news, Dylan Larkin makes the All-Star team. Congratulations. Hope you're healthy soon.
There we go. Yeah, our one shining piece right now, Dylan Larkin playing great. That's not to say that Sider and Raymond aren't doing great, but right now we go where Larkin takes us, and That's the reason he's got a C on his chest. As always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That's One Small Step for Us, One Giant Leap Back in Detroit Sports Broadcast.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.